people going to think with this, or I've got to do that, then you end up, it doesn't go right in that sort of setting.
When you talk to some teenagers, it's a major issue in their lives because you talk to them about rejection. Well, they feel a sense of rejection of their own identity by this.
By the community or?
Well, parents.
Parents in particular, yeah. I mean, it's a let me give you an example. I might be one of those parents, actually, that sort of the frowning. I have traditional values around sort of behaviour and courtesy and respect. And in our church that I go to, there's sort of an evening service where most of the youth go to. And they come in and they wear hats. Well, I was sort of brought up that when you go inside a building, you take your hat off, okay? And they sit in the church seats and then they put their feet up and sling them over the seat in the front. Well, to me, that's the ultimate in disrespect, okay? And that's probably not their intention in doing it, but it's something I look at and think, well, no, you know, and certainly my own son, if I saw him do that, say, when you're at church, you don't do that. It's a very disrespectful thing to do. And what I wonder about is, well, do those young people, I never say anything, I sort of think, well, they're not my kids, it's not my place to be saying anything about it, but they may sense my thoughts about that. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, how should the church community be responding to something like that? Does anyone have any thoughts about that? Yep. Yeah.
And perhaps in the same situation where you don't talk to them about the bad behaviour, you still interest yourself in their life. And then if they're still coming along, whatever, and other people are conforming, oftentimes they end up doing the same. But if not, they've found somebody who can relate to them.
Okay. So it's about, so for those of you who can't hear, that about still treating and talking to those adolescents in a reasonable sort of way. I often think that, like with me sort of seeing those things that I don't particularly approve of, I think, well, I don't have, you know, there's lots of young people there. I don't know them all. I don't know them really well. I know some of them, and those that I know well, I might be able to say something to. But if I don't have the relationship with them, it's entirely inappropriate for me to be saying something or doing something. But I would say, oh, well, there's people within the youth group or, you know, the leaders in the youth group who know those youth who are better in a position to say something about it, if it's appropriate to say something about it. Yep.
So if they're hearing things from you when they're doing it right,
yep.
Then the feet over the chair or the, you know, the dress that you don't like or whatever,
yep.
It might be that you think isn't appropriate, isn't as big an issue,
yep.
As, you know, we as parents,
yep.
Think it is. It could be something that they're just sort of part of the adolescent thing,
yep.
That they're going through, and
yep.
There will be an end.
Okay, Chris said several things then. The first point was about noticing when they do it right. That's really important. The second part, I've now lost it.
Well, there's more of saying that if you have that conversation with
yep.
Other people in which you're able to praise them for the good things they've done,
yep.
Then you're not dropping a bombshell on them.
That's
and
right.
Saying,
yeah.
That's the first time you've spoken to them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also a principle where I could be asking myself some of the questions I put up here tonight. Let me ask myself the question, is it more important that those young people attend church willingly, maybe with some behaviours that I don't necessarily approve of, or is it more important that they conform to my view, my particular view, of respect? Often they're the sorts of questions that we need to ask ourselves if we're spending time with teenagers.
That was the second part.
Yeah.
Then what our issue doesn't seem so big to us.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing the adolescent in a context outside our own, so that
yep.
We're praising them and encouraging them in what they are doing
Yep.
That we think is right.
Yep.
It's yeah. Good in God's sight.
Yep.
What I'm finding interesting is that all this applies to adults as well.
Yep. Can everyone hear that? So, if you've, so your name's...
Oh,
Sue's just said that all of these principles we're talking about actually apply to adults as well. Yep, which these principles you actually apply in your work relationships too, I think. Yep. Are there other questions? Emotional intelligence. Okay, the question was, what age is it appropriate to start teaching children about emotional intelligence? Shall I just, I'll briefly explain what emotional intelligence is. If ever you want to get me going on a subject that's dear to my heart, I'll give you a day workshop on emotional intelligence. The emotional intelligence, now let me talk about IQ. IQ is your ability to, you know, IQ can be measured on certain tests. Your memory, your ability to solve mathematical problems, your vocabulary, your memory for sentences, your ability to see patterns in certain pictures, they're all things that can be measured in terms of IQ, your general intelligence. In the last few years, there's been a lot more interest in a thing called emotional intelligence, and it's a fairly complicated notion. It's a bit slippery. And I mean, the first, well, there's almost five tiers to it. The first tier is about the ability to recognise emotions within ourselves. The next tier is the, so to know when we're, how can we hope to manage our anger if we don't know when we're angry? So we're going to recognise emotions within ourselves, then be able to manage those emotions. So when I'm angry, this is what I do so that I don't punch the kid in the class next to me. Then to be able to recognise emotions in other people so that when the principal in the school talks to me with that slight tone in his voice, that means I'm one step away from being sent, you know, on detention or something or other. So to pick up those things. And then also that's managing emotions, recognise emotions in others, then managing emotions in relationships. So when the teacher talks to me like this or my mum sort of starts to get annoyed, I know that if I step back and make a little bit of a joke, she calms down, and then the final one is sort of managing relationships more generally. Emotional intelligence sounds, it might sound very wishy-washy, but they're actually critically important to how people fare in life. Who here, who's a parent, would like to see their child grow up and be in a long-term happy marriage? Okay. What's the most important thing you can be teaching your kids now to best give them the chances of that? Pardon? That's a good start. There's a specific skill that kids can be taught that what they know is that gives them the best chance of having a good, happy, long-term relationship.
Communication.
No, more basic than that. You're going to think... Pardon? Yep, more basic than that. No, more basic than that. Was the first one, for those of you taking notes, was the first one I put up and you thought... To recognise your own, recognise your own emotions and be able to recognise emotions in the other partner. When they've looked at that, when they've done studies on couples who have gone to counselling and having all sorts of troubles in their relationships, and what is it that will predict whether that relationship will last in the long term? Is it that they have marital counselling? Is it whether they go to church? Is it whether they have a certain income? Is it whether they're employed or whatever? No. The most important skill is whether those two people can recognise the emotions in the other. Okay? Basic skill of emotional intelligence. And you think, so there's why, you know, often people sort of think, oh, they're the warm, fuzzy things that schools are getting into these days that don't help them learn the three R's. These are actually the really, really important things that determine whether they're going to be happy in life or not, or have decent sorts of relationships. In terms of your basic question about when is it appropriate to start teaching kids about emotional intelligence, they learn that from the moment they are born. There's lots of research that looks at now about what goes on. I've been to these training days on it. that what goes on between a mother when she holds her baby, I think, oh, they just hold babies. No, you sit there watching two concurrent videos, contemporaneous videos, of the baby's face and the mother's face, and the dance that goes on with their eyes and their emotions. And what they're learning there is the skills that will help them sustain long-term marriages down the track, you know, from the moment they're born. And it's actually a whole area that is a very big area. And kids learn it, on the whole, kids learn the skills of emotional intelligence by watching their parents, okay? So if this is why, if I go back to my point about, you know, be the sort of person you'd like your child to be. If you're a selfish person in the relationships in your life, then that's probably what your kids are going to be. If you're somebody that is sensitive to the needs of others, then that's probably the way your kids are going to grow up. If you're somebody that has a genuine concern for the poor and the downtrodden, chances are that's the way your kids are going to grow up. You know, these, and generally they don't come because parents say it's really important to sort of behave in these sorts of ways. Kids pick it up. So that's why, I mean, it's a very short answer to a very big question. But tonight, the shortest way of answering is to say those skills of emotional intelligence are absorbed by what kids see in their parents. So I come back to my final point on that first lot of overheads about... live the way you would like to see your teenager live. So that's a sort of a short answer to a very long question, I'm afraid. Is that, does that sort of half answer it? Or did you have something specific in that you wanted to answer? Okay, so you're actually saying, can we talk and teach emotional intelligence to... partly we can, okay? But let me go back to... I'm going to sound like a broken record. Let me go back to a piece of research. I'll just describe the bit of research and it'll answer an important question. There were some cheeky psychologists who thought they'd do some research looking at what influences the way kids behave. And they got like this sort of gambling type machine, like a pinball machine that they could win some money on, okay? And then next to it, they had a charity box. And they got in four groups of kids. And they, first of all, the kids would watch an adult play this machine and they won some money. So they get the money out. And before they walk off, they have to pass this charity box. First adult says, in front of a group of kids, says, it's really important to give to the poor and put some money in, okay? Then all the kids have a go and they watch what the kids do. The next adult with a different group of kids comes in, wins some money, says, it's really important to give to the poor, and then keeps walking straight past the charity box, okay? Next adult with a group of kids wins some money and says, oh, I don't like giving to the poor. They need to learn to help themselves, and keeps walking, all right? Then the last adult, the fourth one, wins some money, says, oh, I don't want to give money to the poor. They need to learn to help themselves, but then still puts some money in and keeps walking. And then what they did was all of those kids then got a chance to play the game, win some money, and walk past the charity box. And what they did was they measured all the responses of all the kids with the different adults saying certain things and then behaving in different ways. And what they found was very simple. Basically, what you say to kids has no influence. How you behave is the thing that influences them. So even when parents say one thing and do another, for good or worse or whatever, what you do is the thing that has influence. That's really, really important, because particularly for parents of teenagers, because often if we see the teenager not doing the right thing, we think, oh, maybe I should talk to them about it. They need to, perhaps if they could just understand what I know about it. And I'm not saying that it's bad to do that, but come back to this. I've deliberately put this on the end. Be Be the sort of person that you want your teenager to be, because that's what we know 20 years from now will have been the thing that most shapes your teenager, most shapes your child. Other questions?
Martin, I've really enjoyed what you've said. Been extremely, extremely helpful. I was just looking at the section when things go wrong, and wondering if number five, I've got number five anyway, where we discuss being willing to do things differently.
Yep.
By breaking the pattern and breaking the expectation.
Yep.
Child,
yep.
Probably we could pop in there,
yep,
the aspect of apologising,
yep,
to our children,
yep,
seeking forgiveness in an endeavour to reconcile,
yep,
which is a really, really important aspect of restoring relationships.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's ever too late to restore a relationship. Might have come unstuck.
It's never too late to restore a relationship. Let me give you, I'll tell you about, it's in my line of work, there's a great deal of interest now in what's called attachment therapy. That what we know is that kids who have good attachment or bonding or connection or whatever you want to call it with their parents are much less likely to get into trouble with their behaviours and their mental health. So there's a great deal of interest now, and it's come out of a lot of research that's come out in the last 10 or 15 years about what we know about attachment, that it forms very early in life with babies. And there's now these sort of therapies emerging that focus on attachment, rather than sort of, you know, punish them here or give them time out for that or do this or give them this limit. Look at what can you do to make that relationship work as well as possible. And if the relationship is good, then they'll behave better, okay? That's not always, but that's a sort of a general principle. But they've actually got this model that, it's a new and radical model for attachment therapy with adolescents. So sometimes relationships between parents and teenagers go badly wrong, okay? Don't want to blame, that's just what sometimes happens. And we can look at doing all sorts of things, but there's this radical response, and that is to actually ask the teenager about what their experience has been of their relationship with their parent, and then ask, where did it go wrong? It went wrong when mum and dad separated. It went wrong when mum started drinking. It went wrong when something, you know, whatever happened, okay? And ask them, what was your experience of that? Why did the relationship go wrong? How did it impact on how you started acting towards your mum or dad? And to get that very clearly. And then what you do is you get the parent into the room and just get the teenager talking again about what was it that we've just been talking about, and go back over it and maybe ask the parent, what do you remember of it? And then the parent can do something really radical. They can say, well, actually, I'm really sorry it went that way. I'm really sorry that things didn't work the way it should have and that I behaved in that way, or I left mum or whatever it might have been. And actually seek forgiveness. And apparently what they found that, you know, when forgiveness occurs in relationships, it can actually be a really powerful healing thing. And it's a very simple note. And when I sat there, I said, I think I might have heard about this before somewhere. But they're actually, you know, they're very basic biblical concepts, really. But looking at, I guess, finding ways of doing that in a way that sort of works well with teenagers. Forgiveness is a very powerful thing in relationships. You know, we sort of all know that, but often we forget that in our day-to-day practice of what happens in relationships. Another question? Yep. How can step-parents form better attachments to kids? Okay. I'll just throw in some general principles, okay, if that's all right. Let me tell you about those families that are step families that come to CAMS, okay? Often the step parent is the father, they've got into a new relationship, and the stepfather's barely arrived in the family, and he's saying, well, these kids, they should be doing this, and they shouldn't talk to their mother like that, and you should. And what happens is they try to exert, in essence, what they're trying to do is exert discipline before they have a relationship. Okay? And we're all a bit like this. It's not just kids. If somebody tries to exert discipline over me and I don't have respect for them already, or I don't have a good relationship with them, it's not going to work. Okay? So a very simple rule of thumb, this is what I say to parents in that situation, is that if you're moving into like a step family, in the first 12 months, the natural parent, whether that be the mother or the father, the natural parent has 100% responsibility for discipline. Okay? I wouldn't usually say that, but in sort of this sort of transitional time of step families, until they have a good relationship, the biological parent, who already has the relationship, has 100% responsibility for discipline. And that the step parent needs to be thinking about, what are those things that I can do that can be building my relationship with these children? And then it's not as if it's suddenly at 12 months, then you start, but, you know, the idea is to build the relationship first, and what you can do is not sort of keep completely out of discipline, but more be backing up the other parent. So the natural parent has the primary responsibility. That's like, it's sometimes more complicated than that, but if that's the basic principle that I would always get people to look at. And remember, for a step parent, don't jump into discipline before you've built up the relationship. Is that sort of a reasonable answer? Yeah? Often step parents feel very inadequate. And often they sort of get a bit of bad press too. There are lots of step parents who have very good relationships with their kids. Okay, I took a referral this week of a family that I saw, a teenage girl that I saw several years ago, and her mother had rejected her terribly. This young girl, she'd gone to live with her dad, and dad's a nice bloke, but he's a bit of an adolescent himself. And they've started, because he's an adolescent, she's now an adolescent, they're fighting like adolescents. And it's the stepmother on the phone to me who suddenly inherited a 13-year-old stepdaughter, which is not an easy task. But basically, she's been there, talked to her, supported her and whatever, and has a really good relationship. When it's going wrong, she's the one that rings me saying, I'd like her to come back and see you again, because she's fighting with her natural dad all the time. They're like two adolescents, those two. Can I make them come in and see you? Well, that's actually really nice to see. Like, there's a step-parent who has a good relationship with her stepdaughter to the point that she can be saying to her, look, come on, let's see if we can get some help to try and get this sorted out. So there's lots of step-parents who have a really good influence on kids. Yep. Are there other questions? Never give up. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep. Sorry, I didn't hear that last bit. Yep. 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 So what's your first name?
Yvonne.
What Yvonne's saying is, I'm not sure whether it's a question or a statement, really.
I'm just asking you if you've got any pearls.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you just put some pearls of wisdom in there, actually. What Yvonne was just saying is that with her own son, it sounds like there's been a lot of difficulties, quite serious difficulties by the sounds of it. And that it's got to the point where, you know, things haven't been the way that you've wanted and there's nothing you can do about it. And
we draw the line in the sand.
Yeah. Yep. 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 Okay. You're actually talking about pretty serious things. And that's often when parents get pushed to make decisions that really go against the grain of being a parent. Because what parent likes to say to their child, out? Yeah. Can I just say a couple of comments about that? Sometimes, let me give a biblical metaphor about parenting. There's a belief in our society that somehow or other, if we do it right as parents, our kids will turn out okay. Well, I don't believe that. Who of you might know any farmers? Let me ask, if you're a farmer and you do all your sowing of your crops correctly, sow at the right time, fertilise, you know, till the soil, watch all the weather forecast, do all the right things, does that guarantee you a good crop? No. If you do all the right things, what it does is it improves your chances of things turning out okay, but it doesn't give you any guarantees. And parenting is just like that. You can do all the right things and sometimes it goes wrong. Sometimes bad things happen to good families, all right? And sometimes there might have been things that parents might have done. They think, gee, I wish I hadn't done that. Well, we can't do that. Fortunately, God's a forgiving God. And parents find themselves in situations with their kids that they're really very unhappy with. And I guess I think it's important sometimes to acknowledge that sometimes there isn't anything physically that we can do other than commit those things to God. And yeah. 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 Well, the idea of letting go runs completely counter to what it is to be a mother. Runs completely against the grain of what it is to be a mother. So sometimes as a parent, you have to do things that go against the grain. The idea, and sometimes that's what all parents face, at some point your kids move away. And that's actually can be a healthy thing, or it is a healthy thing, but it actually goes against the grain of what drives you as a parent, you know, of what, you know, you've put a lot of energy into as a parent. And I think, I can say, if you're part of a church community, I guess for parents like yourself, I think it's especially important for church communities, for parents who've had those experiences, they can, even if it's never said, they can have that sense of, oh, people think that somehow or other I got it wrong. They can remember when I did X, or they can remember when I should have said so-and-so. Even if those things are never said, often as parents, because there's such strong feelings that when it doesn't go right, we have a sense that everyone's watching us, you know, or everyone sort of has accusing eyes or thoughts that they keep to themselves about what we should have done. And I think that's where it's really important that in communities, we're especially supportive of those parents where it just hasn't gone right. Because sometimes there aren't things that we can do to make it better. But being in a community that's supportive of that is really important.
Yep. Conscience to God,
yep.
That is really all that matters.
Yep.
You can override whatever anybody else can think of what your decisions are.
Yep.
If you, in your own mind, feel you are right with God in that decision.
Yep. So, what's your name?
Anne.
What Anne's just been saying, for those at the back, that when you're in those situations, I call it being able to sleep with your own conscience. If you can say to yourself at the end of the day, I did what I thought was best. you know, because you'll always have thoughts of lots of parents, even parents who've done a good job and kids are doing right, they're often plagued with thoughts of guilt, not just when things have gone wrong, but it's that thought about, well, I did the best that I could. I was a good enough parent. I did the best that I could, then, and I couldn't have done any more. Then that's what we need to take consolation in. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I'm just thinking about a final question for the evening. Nope. Okay, that's fine. There you go.
Well, it's my happy duty to actually thank Martin on behalf of us all for devoting his evening to us and the time leading up to that and actually preparing his material. Believe it or not, Martin doesn't